Hello, welcome back to another episode of Fireside Chats, or if you're a new listener, welcome. I am your host, Brooke Ryback, and this episode is going to highlight one of our most anticipated events of the year, which is our new Annals publication and its launch, which I understand is a long time coming since the event happened in March, but I believe not only celebrates the hard work put into this year's New Annals subversion, which for anybody unfamiliar with the New Annals, it's a yearly publication of the Roosevelt Group with a set theme, and we release it as a physical copy. It's a really amazing piece of work that has purely brought about our discussions and passions that make up Roosevelt Group. But this episode also celebrates the overall growth we experienced during the 2024-2025 academic school year. Thus, to encapsulate the group effort that is at the heart of all that we do here at Roosevelt Group, but again, most especially in our new Annals, I speak with the head of our new Annals, Stella Mortarotti, but also with some of the writers and members who were present at the subsequent launch, which took place on March 20th at the Hyde. I believe this episode does a good job of highlighting the personalities and insatiable curiosity which makes Roosevelt Group so special through one of our most anticipated events. This is also to say that this is going to be my last episode as host for Fireside Chats, as I am a fourth year and headed on to other things, but this podcast will forever have a special place in my heart. Thus, it stands as a reflection on the pleasure and privilege it has been to be able to be a part of this wonderful community and unpack the diverse and niche passions everyone a part of Roosevelt Group brings to the table. So with all that being said, I'll let our episode begin. Enjoy! Today we have, this is going to be our first part of an attempt to talk to multiple people on the new Annals, but we're celebrating a new launch with Stella Mortarotti, who is the head. So yeah, she's going to give us a little bit of history and also just tell us about herself and her interests. So yeah, the first things I'm going to ask you, Stella, is the year you're in, your degree, where you're from, and I'll just let you take it from there.
Yeah, so I'm in third year studying math and computer science, and I'm currently based in Canada, and I'm very excited to come back to St. Andrews. Otherwise, the question where I'm from, I guess I struggle to answer, like a lot of people in St. Andrews. I'm half French, half Italian, but grew up in the UK. Mm-hmm. And so have a bit of a mixed European background. But yeah, it's fun.
And then on top of that, this might be a little weird, but it's a tradition on Fireside Chat. So we always start with an icebreaker. So I wanted to ask you if you could include any author, historical figure, role model, take it as you will, into this year's new Annals, who would it be and why?
So one of my favorite authors of all time is this French author called Eric Emmanuel Schmitt. Hmm. He is fundamentally a philosopher, but whenever you read a new one of his novels or plays, he's a playwright too. It's easy to, if you pick up the, depending on which play or book you pick up first, you get the impression that he's Islamic or Christian or Jewish, because he often likes to kind of play with more conventional ideas of religion. So for example, he did a reinterpretation of the Bible story in Jesus through mm-hmm. the eyes of Pontius Pilate. And so the way that he wrote with such, I mean, for me as a Catholic, I thought that he dealt with this slightly controversial, you know, touchy subject for some people, with such interesting historical perspectives, with such a deep philosophical outlook. And he does the same with every other religion, and generally deals with themes like grief and loss and belonging in really touching ways. And he himself says that he got into writing through this one day revelation moment in the desert, where a voice came to him and just said, things will be the way they're meant to be, or everything is fine. Like this just feeling that there must be some deity out there who's just like controlling the universe and controlling our consciousness. And from that, he decided that he wanted to delve into what it means for us to have faith and belief and that kind of stuff through his texts. So to me, he's the kind of person that if he was, give him a 1500 word limit, he would manage to use that in the most incredible way possible. And especially given the context of some of the themes that we try to deal with, I think he would distill the themes and the essence of the themes in the most beautiful ways.
Yeah, of course. That sounds amazing. And I definitely want to check out his work now.
Strongly recommends.
But yeah, and this is kind of gonna blend into what we'll talk about. I'm gonna jump to this year's theme of subversion. And we can discuss that with Nieuwenhuis's larger history, because I want to get into all of that. Yeah, I'll just let you kind of explain what Nieuwenhuis is, and then
Yeah.
maybe from there we can unpack how your favorite author kind of fits into the mold. So yeah.
Yeah, sounds good. So Nieuwenhuis themselves, we've taken them on now to make it an opportunity for Roosevelt Group members to write longer form articles compared to the quick takes, which is usually shorter form. Very academically rigorous, and it's kind of an introduction for a lot of us university students as to what it might be like to write for a publication, but where there is complete free rein ultimately on what you want to write about. The Annales itself is a school of history that sought to kind of remove the way that we studied history through key figures. I don't know, Alexander the Great, Napoleon, Hitler, the way that we might think of a few key individuals involved in history. Instead, the school was trying to find some perhaps alternative underlying forces that would drive historical change, whether that's social movements or maybe scientific movements. And so we today are trying to kind of emulate the idea of unpicking some of the phenomena that we see in the field of international relations or in scientific progress and understand how those might affect our future potentially. And yeah, ultimately, and this is something that was mentioned in the very, very first edition of New Annals with the Roosevelt Group. The editor just ended his letter just saying, "We're trying to answer the question, where are we headed?" And that is, I think, a good question for us to start thinking about as young professionals going into industry eventually. It's what role are we going to take in that future? How are we going to model this destination where we're headed through our actions, through our thoughts, through our writing, through our research? And that's, I think, a good opportunity for us. And so then that leads into how we as editors choose a theme to guide the members through this process of such a massive question of where are we headed to, okay, how can we narrow this down to specifically what aspect of the world today do we actually care about?
Yeah, well, thank you for summarizing. That's really interesting, because thinking about the question, where are we headed in terms of subversion, is really interesting, because I think it's the complete opposite of predictability. And I don't know if that
Yeah.
makes sense, but I find this year's topic really interesting. So I wondered if you could kind of tap a little bit more into the decision making into titling it Subversion. What was the discussion like amongst
Yeah.
you guys?
So practically speaking, the discussion was done between the members of the publication board, where we just came together knowing that we're in a time which is very tense in terms of, like, even the expression free speech brings out a lot of mixed emotions in people. What are the limits of free speech? Are we ever justified in no platforming people? How do we deal in an era where maybe unintentionally we're restricting our access to free speech by using social media or the news that we consume? It's kind of like with an age in which it is so hard to express maybe unconventional opinions. How do we as a journal try to give people the space to do that? And so we were looking into kind of the idea of revolution, dissent, change, paradigm shifts. That was kind of where the discussion was headed. We were looking for these the occasion maybe to also test people's reasoning and reckoning with the world around them. I think that even from my perspective, my instant thing is to think subversion. Okay, now we're looking into the world of scientific revolutions, technological changes. For me, the like AI obviously is the big paradigm shift of today. So instantly, I had some associations, and even myself, I had to challenge myself to okay, let's push this a bit harder. What is actually subversion in terms of politically, or what are the deeper implications if we're going to be shifting technologically, maybe looking at things more ethically? And yeah, I think subversion in itself is also a term that when I didn't come up with the term. I think Daria did. And at first, even I recoiled a little bit. Like, subversion, do we really want to be encouraging people to rebellion? Is rebellion the best way? But, and actually looking into the definition, subversion is subtle.
That's
It's,
good.
yeah, it's supposed to be like reasoned, and it's supposed to be perhaps a more gradual change. Dissent tends to be the bigger violent shifts, the bigger revolutions, the bigger personalities that are more explosive. And we tend to think of subversion as the underlying currents, which are potentially the ones that drive historical change more effectively. Now, those are two different schools of thought, but so it opens a lot of exploration. And it was really interesting to see how instantly people would latch onto the idea of subversion, some more radically than others, and see how members responded to quite a challenging prompt, I think.
Yeah, it was really interesting to, not to spoil, because our conversation is before the launch. I mean, by the time this podcast comes out, it'll probably be after the launch, but I won't give too much away, just in case. But looking at the different articles this year, there was a wide range of subversion in the lens of art history to political movements to science, like you said. I think, to me, when I was, because you had me thinking, like, okay, what does subversion mean to me? And you're right. I think dissent is more outspoken out there, kind of like the star of the show, whereas subversion is much more calculated and almost layered in a way. How you were saying, at first you thought of subversion in your scientific lens, but then you were able, as you kind of molded over, to unpack it in different ways. I think subversion kind of incites that more so than dissent. I was thinking, though, for the icebreaker question, if I could choose an author, historical figure, the first person who came to mind for me was Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and her famous, token phrase of "I dissent," because she was always kind of pushing the boundaries, obviously pushing for women's rights in the U.S. legal system, but in other ways too. And I don't know. That's a sidetrack, but that was kind of my own answer to the icebreaker.
No, it's interesting. And with that, as the word dissent in itself then used a whole other like parallel, even etymological field where you've got dissent and consent. Consent itself also having so many connotations today. So where do you draw the line and all of that? In itself, they're really interesting themes just to mess around with from a philosophical point of view too.
Of course, and that's where I can't wait to head to the launch and talk with all the authors and everybody just there. I think just opening up the discussion of subversion is an
Yeah.
exciting one that's gonna be fun in person. But yeah, and then I also wanted to ask, this is also kind of a side question, I guess. But what interested you to be the head of New Annals this year? You're very impassioned and you seem very calculated yourself. So yeah, I was just wondering if you could give us a bit more of your background.
So I've been a member of the Reservoir Group since first year. And made really good friends who were part of the whole editorial process, notably Gigi Glover, who was supposed to be my co-head this year, and Lisa Lindsay. And kind of already seeing the joy that they had in putting this together and during the launches when they were, just standing there glowing with this piece of work that so many people have contributed, which you put a lot of time into, and it's physically there. And I think that a lot of my contributions to the Rosebud Group to that point had been, in a more social sense or in writing, but never taking on that much responsibility. And when the occasion came up, I thought that despite the challenge of doing it from a distance, thankfully editorial is a job that you can do pretty well remotely. And it gives you the chance to test how well are you with dealing with deadlines, how good are you at communicating with people who are supposed to be sending you work, maintaining consistency in the like process that you're using to edit, corrections, citations, and then eventually putting the whole thing together. And so I think, yeah, as soon as they offered me the opportunity, I was like, absolutely. Say less, I'll give it a go. To be honest, I don't know if I was the most qualified person to do it to start with. And then actually
you learn everything like pretty fast. At the end of the day, these are like there is a tradition to maintain, because obviously this is now the 7th edition, so we need to maintain some kind of consistency through the editions. And then apart from that, it's I think we're lucky to have an incredible team of very, very talented and professional individuals anyway, who make it really easy to put something like this together, ultimately.
Definitely. And an important aspect of it, and where I think you're being a little too humble, honestly, is that obviously with the new annals, there's this notion of getting alternative voices, getting alternative perspectives, and tapping into creativity that we haven't tapped into before, as a think tank. And so I think the new annals is a, like you said, a physical representation of all these different voices and people who are new to the process of publication or writing for Roosevelt Group together and creating something that we can physically be proud of, I think is a really great endeavor for us and for you
Agreed.
to lead. So that's really exciting. And I wanted to ask, piggybacking off of that, how was the publication process this year? And if you could explain the publication process a bit more. I don't know if that's too cut and dry of a question, but
No, but this is like this is beneficial also for people who want to contribute in the future or to new members. The process in itself, from a writing point of view, as it's, we released the theme, people had, I think, overall 2 months to submit proposals and then articles. Already from the proposals, there were some interesting things that came out, like someone who wanted to write pro oil and someone who wanted to write against, like the big global talk about climate change, and instead narrowing it down. So already there was some in itself like slightly opposing opinions that were coming out, and that was really cool to see. But my policy was to, if there were any themes that seemed a bit vague or wishy-washy, give everyone the space to give me a call and try to sort out their thoughts. So I had some really fun little chats with people who kind of just came to me saying, oh, I have an idea. And then I would just push them to see, how far does this idea actually go? How far do you think you have the evidence that you can collect? How far is your idea original also? But that was a real privilege to be able to call people up who are on the other side of the ocean, new members, and also get a bit of a gist of who they are through how they were expressing themselves. So it was interesting to then see people who initially I might have had some maybe apprehension about how the article will turn out, write some of the most fantastic ones that we have. But then, yes, yeah, so over this another month and the articles start rolling in, my editing process is I basically didn't touch any of the writing except for clarity. And the biggest thing is keeping citations consistent. Obviously, everyone comes from different academic backgrounds, and in different fields are obviously going to have different types of citation. And so it was just being clear, please just stick with this time. I'm so sorry. You're gonna have to. That's the most tedious thing. And I know it's tedious for people. Everyone hates the bibliography, but we need to, I mean, maintain academic integrity throughout. And then the bulk of the time was learning to use InDesign. It's this trial and error of trying to get everything to fit together. And I haven't seen the final result yet. I have a few changes that I think I'd make if I was on publication again next year. But overall, it was fun, and it meant that I had, this was my creative outlet for 2 months. I'm not a creative person. I don't have the occasion, like in St. Andrews, I'm not one of the painters or musicians or whatever. But to have this like very design moment, that was really satisfying. So I enjoyed the process a lot. And I think that made it definitely easier, because otherwise it can be long and a little bit lonely, I guess, as an editing job, but
No, I mean, I definitely think you have creativity. Every line of the process, from even like getting people to just align to one citation type, like there's creativity involved in what you do. And it's really commendable, and it's so exciting to see what the final result is. But yeah, I think that's really interesting. And did you have a particular favorite part of the process, or would you just do it all
oh,
over?
I definitely have a least favorite part, getting the pictures. That was because
Oh
the
my
copy,
gosh.
getting photos was rough. But honestly, favorite part of the process was getting the articles in. and getting to read, because I think that in previous years, being a member, I would skim through once we got the journals and physical copy after the launches, I'd kind of skim through the list of articles and be like, okay, well, actually, I'm not interested in global politics. I'm just going to skip to the technology sections and the health sections. And this, I didn't have the choice. I had to read about what was going on with the like repercussions of Qatar and what was going on the side of the world with like even historically, looking at Hong Kong and these are things that I don't know about at all. I'm from a very scientific background, and I rarely have the occasion to delve into that kind of side of the world. Like, to me, it's very let's leave the global news to the people who actually have to do the research for it. And this was a bit of a reality show, guys. So no, I can't keep my head down. And I think something very representative of that is that the first article that I wrote for New Annals for this edition was going to be the quantum revolution and what that meant for AI. A quite technical article, which ultimately would have been interesting for a tiny percent of people, and was, I mean, in my eyes, eventually I was like, this is actually a waste of paper. This is doing a disservice to the Rosebud Group for me to be using 5 pages to write about this when I am now in Canada seeing one of the most insane levels of homelessness I've ever seen in the world, levels of homelessness that I've never seen in London or Paris or any of the other big cities I've been to. And yet everywhere in Canada has these issues. And not only, but people around me are extremely insensitive about them and are completely desensitized and aren't even talking about it. And that a shock of actually, I'm in this position of kind of responsibility of having to use this space for something useful. Or at least to get a voice out and to get any problem out. And I was like, no, actually, let's subvert my own thinking and get my ass out there, excuse my language, and actually start reading into these issues, which are globally more important, yeah, somewhat than a quantum computer, which might change finance in 10 years. So I think that was also a really special part of the process to get influence with other people's broadness of thought and perspective on the world and actually try to do my own bit a little bit, despite my slightly more niche academic background.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting, and that brings up a broader, I don't know how you want to get into this question or topic, but that just gets into the question of, the power dynamics within producing knowledge and being the head of Annals. Did you find that kind of power that you had and that responsibility that you realized, was that nerve-wracking at all, or was it something that you stepped into with excitement? Was it a mix of both?
Well, my policy throughout was I'm not going to change what people are going to like. From the moment that someone reaches out to me saying that they want to write for New Annals, free rein, I'm going to just test how much you think that this stands with the theme of subversion. But up until then, like, you can write whatever and I can disagree with what you're saying and I cannot be remotely interested in what you're pitching. But it's my duty as head of editorial to help you get that piece out and reach the biggest possible audience in the neatest possible way and make your article readable. Full stop. And I think that's I personally think that should be the responsibility of every editor for every global newspaper out there. For you kind of
Definitely.
should have the decency of this day and age to remain as impartial as possible, which is saying, like, I know that it's impossible because of lobbies and we literally saw last week that free speech is now being censored in the US in a way that's been unprecedented. We are maybe naive in thinking that that's not something happening only in the US. I know certainly that other newspapers in the UK are being affected by censorship in perhaps more subtle forms. But I think it's every editor's fundamental duty to try to get information out in the most balanced and open way, especially considering the fact that people now, more than ever, are going to just be exposed to whatever news and whatever penchant politically that they want to be exposed. It's so easy to isolate yourself. So I'm kind of, and to this day, still look for news sources that try to be as varied as possible and struggle to find them, to be honest. But yeah.
Oh, it's a constant struggle. But yeah, are there any also, this is kind of stemming from the publication question, were there any particular insights that you gained overlooking this whole process?
That I am very good at putting off the actual work that I have to do if I have something that's captured my attention more. if anything, this was just
Very
like,
fair.
while I was doing this, I told everyone, the work that I'm going to be doing is so uninteresting compared to the fact that I now have some kind of exposure and something that feels like it matters a bit more than a random ass coding project. But no, it's seriously, I think that it just emphasizes the importance of, as a student, being part of societies that are outside of what you'd potentially more conventionally fall into. I know that everyone that I work with are going to be in Queen, here it's Queen's Women in Computer Science and all the tech firms and the AI society and whatever. And it's true that if you don't push yourself out there, you're not going to get that cross-disciplinary open-mindedness, which I think is important. When you're going through interview processes, it's important to be able to talk about the relevance that your field has and the broader scope. And even then, one day when we do step out into the world of work, like, not that I'm personally someone who stands by like the whole EA movement particularly, but I completely agree with the fact that you are so responsible for the way that your work bleeds into the real world outside. And I think that it's really easy to get isolated within that. So just being part of the Rosebud group, for example, emphasizes to me, yes, as editor or as member, the importance of just spreading your horizons a bit more, spreading your network into fields that you don't expect. And so broad scheme of things, being reminded that you have other people our age who are researching so hard into topics that they're so passionate about is a good reminder that, there's more out there to what you know. And yeah, that I think was kind of the overarching, just like profound impact that it had on me of just, there's some really smart people out there. And they care about some things which I would have no idea. So it's, yeah, a good occasion to go out and explore. Explore, adventure, always try to learn as much as possible.
I love how you bring that up and you emphasize such open-mindedness, because I think that's an aspect of Roosevelt Group that I think definitely people, even especially people who don't really know what we're about, miss is that aspect of, at least for me, like when I joined, I had no idea I was gonna, well, I knew there was a podcast, I was interested in it, but I was very nervous in starting, and I had no idea that I would end up kind of leading it. It kind of just fell into my hands. And I was interested in podcasts, but I wouldn't say I was ready to lead or host, but I just kind of threw myself into the role, as kind of how you described how you were kind of thrown into the editorial process of the new annals. But you come back out of the process and you're like, oh, actually, I just gained a new skill. I gained a new passion, a new niche. And I, in the process, I got to learn about other people's passions, and it's very motivating.
Yeah, and it can be scary for sure to realize that there's so much other way that we don't know, but then you can also take it with opposite attitude and be like, wow, so much out there that I don't know. This is so exciting. There's more, way, way more that we don't know.
Yeah, definitely. And as we begin to kind of wrap up, although I don't want to put a timestamp on our lovely conversation, I wanted to ask, what are you most proud of from the writers of the new annals this year, and also from your own contributions?
I think the thing that touched me the most is that some of the writers have taken on some pretty deeply personal approaches to the topics that they've written about, which is doubly challenging because not only are you trying to go against the grain of conventional thought by definition because of the theme of subversion, but then you're also taking a bit of a personal risk because some of these are associated to either experiences that you've been through or people that you know. I think that's when I realized that people were taking the opportunity to write for Rosebud Group really to heart. And really, like, this means a lot to some people as a platform to get out some really valuable thoughts and opinions. And so for me, it was just, I don't know, I felt honored to be able to see the journey from them pitching an idea to writing an article to then getting to format the article. And hopefully, I hope that they'll be proud of seeing their work in print too. And yeah, that was special. And to be able to take ownership of the creative process you're saying, the design process, and try to do people's work, the justice that they deserve.
All right, so our first guest tonight at live at the Roosevelt Group New and Now's launch at the Hyde is going to be Miss Daria, our head of publications. So I'm just gonna ask a few quick questions. First of all, your year, what you're studying.
Hi, I'm Daria. I'm a fourth year studying International Relations and Middle East Studies, and I've been part of the Roosevelt Group for 2 years and a bit now.
Nice. Well, I'm really excited to have you on. And I just wanted to ask first, how are you enjoying the event? And second, how did you find the publication process? What was your perspective of it?
So, first of all, the event is great, but every year, why I really love the New and Now's launch is because our other events is usually just us Roosevelt members, but for New and Now's, we actually bring in a lot of people, and everyone has such interesting friends or acquaintances. And I know some people think, oh, Roosevelt Group is just international relations people, and everyone's saying the same thing, but actually, you'd be surprised how varied everyone's interests are and how many things you actually learn from all your conversations, whether you ask them about where they're from or what they're studying or what they're passionate about. So I always love these events because I've met so many people through this, and Roosevelt offers this great opportunity of networking across all subjects. So yeah, for you guys who want to come next year, you definitely must, because I have to say it's one of my favorite events at St. Andrews, and I've been to many as a 40er. Yeah, and then your other question was about the publication process. So the one this year, I really enjoyed the theme of it. I actually kind of like suggested it in the background meeting, and why I really enjoy the theme of subversion is because at the end of the day, we are a think tank, and we're not just supposed to parrot like other people's opinions or the government's opinions or the media's opinions. We are supposed to subvert expectations and subvert all of these academic fields and kind of get our own perspective out there, and you'd be surprised at how different everyone's takes are. I don't think you can say that any single article is similar to another, whether it's topic or how it's structured or how much their own opinion goes through. So I think especially this year it was very exciting for me because before I wasn't in the publications, I was just contributing to it. But yeah, it's great, and it is a big process actually for the people who have not been involved with such projects before. We are a big team working behind the scenes trying to get to a proper team, trying to organize everyone, trying to make sure everything gets done by the deadline. We also have amazing graphic designers and like organizing all of it. Our head of New and Now, Stella, is amazing. That's why it looks so beautiful,
Yes,
because
no, it's really nice.
it's such a big part. It's not only what you write, it's also how it's presented. So it's a great project where absolutely everyone contributes. And of course, teamwork is dream work. We love it,
Teamwork
yeah.
makes the dream work. We'll leave it at that. Thank you, Daria.
Now this is our second guest, Mr. Michael, and I'll have you take it away with your year, what you're studying, and just your article title for the New Annals.
Of course. My name is Michael. I am a third-year International Relations and Middle East Studies student at St. Andrews, and my article title is The Case of Qatargate.
Awesome. Thank you, Michael. And I was wondering, how was the general writing process in this New Annals? Is this your first one?
Yeah, it actually is. So when researching something that was close to subversion, I really tried to encounter different, themes that really encapsulate this connected to Middle East and my homeland, Europe. So by tackling Qatargate, which was a massive scandal in 2022 amidst the World Cup, it was really interesting to see all the research, all the perspectives from both Middle Eastern sources on the matter, as well as the European Parliament and, in general, journalists involved.
Awesome. That's really interesting that you also have like a personal take and kind of your own. Did you take your, well, own position on the issue or?
I would say the issue in general that the case of Qatargate tackles is whether Europe is losing its power in the Middle East, whether it's becoming subjugated, and as the theme of the entire publication suggests, whether there is a subversion of power in between those main powers. I would say to summarize the case of Qatargate, yes, Qatari government and in general, Middle Eastern powers are trying to become more influential in European politics to favor their agenda in terms of energy. So, yeah, that would be my main position here.
Nice. Well, thank you. And for our listeners, please check out our new and Al's Subversion so you can read Michael's article. And last question, how are you finding the event tonight?
The event tonight is lovely. I'm enjoying the atmosphere and the general vibe of every member today.
Thanks. Me too. All right. Thank you, Michael.
Bye-bye. So
this is our third guest, Max. Hello.
Hello.
And I'm going to ask you first your year, what you study, and your article title, please.
Okay, so I'm a second year student studying mathematics and economics. The title of my article was Fossil Fuels, Are They Too Good to Give Up?
All right, perfect. Well, thank you. Your article sounds really interesting in our new annals. And I was wondering if you could give us a little summary of what your article is about and how you found the general writing process.
Of course. So having done an internship in the oil and gas space over summer, it became very apparent that there was sort of quite mixed narratives. We are very much trying to move towards an eco-friendly future. However, we are still reliant on coal, oil and gas for 80% of our energy. So it's a huge market, and just seeing that sort of juxtaposition of narratives made me want to research it further and write it.
Yeah, well, it sounds really interesting. And the second part of the question is how you found the general writing process to be.
Yeah, so it was quite interesting. Like, studying maths, I don't often get the opportunity, which was part of the reason for wanting to join the Reservoir Group. Yeah. And in terms of the writing process, I found myself very interested in the reading aspect. And there were lots of sort of conflicting sources that were making me sort of want to maybe change the title or take it down a different route. I ended up sort of sticking with my guns, my gut of what my like sort of initial thought was on the topic.
Yeah.
But still trying to blend in the different viewpoints. So that was the main thing for me, is sort of sticking with my initial thought despite all of the conflicting things I was reading.
Yeah, well, that's great. And I'm sure sticking with your gut is always, at least for me, the best way to go about writing and just general life. And my final question for you is, how are you finding the event here at Roosevelt Group so far?
Oh, it's lovely. I probably just arrived around 15 minutes ago.
And I pulled you straight for an interview. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. A pleasant surprise. Yeah, just like very nice to come here and see familiar faces. Obviously, I've been a part of the group for a semester, so still sort of getting to know everyone. But I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
I've enjoyed interviewing you, and I'll let you go have your fun at the new Annals launch now. So
thank you.
Bye. Cheers. All right, this is our fourth guest, Greg, our head of events.
Hi.
So I wanted to ask you first your year, what you study, and your article title.
Okay, I'm in fourth year. I study theology and Hebrew, and the title of my article was The Troublemaker. It is about Jimmy Lai, pro-democracy media tycoon figure in Hong Kong, where I'm from.
So on stemming off of that, I'm wondering how you found the writing process to be, if you had any new insights, your take on Subversion.
So new insights I found was how courageous Jimmy Lai was in terms of his fight for democracy. He was a billionaire who had UK citizenship. So he had every opportunity to leave Hong Kong during the 2019-2020 protests and the trials that entailed after that.
Yeah.
But he chose to be somewhat of a martyr. The writing process was quite tedious because there was quite a few sources. You have to understand Hong Kong's history in terms of colonialism and in terms of its pro-democracy movement. And you also, I guess, you have to understand its arguments about violent protests, whether violent protests are justified or not.
Kudos to you. And for everybody who is listening, please check out Gregory's wonderful article in the New Annals. And my last question for you is how you're finding the event.
Since I planned the event, I hope it's going well.
I think it's going well.
Thank you so much, Greg. Greg is such an awesome person.
Oh, thank you.
I hope the event's going well. My playlist is on.
Your playlist is banging. Your friends are here. They've arrived.
The Roosevelt Group's here.
Yeah.
You know, it's for a good cause.
It's for a good cause. And we're thankful for The Hide for hosting us this evening. Yeah.
Thank you, Brooke. Brooke's so awesome. Love you, Brooke.
Okay. Love you too. Bye. All right.